Well, we've been told for years that the AFL is as even as it's ever been, with seasons going down to the wire and as many as 13 teams' finals possibilities. So what about this year? And the Blues haven't lost a game, but are they actually playing well? And does it matter? Hello and welcome to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Andy Bellairs, and coming up on the show today, Sam Landsberger will join us to talk about the lopsided season so far. And Josh Barnes is hot on the case of the Blues, and he'll join us too. All right, let's get into it with Sam. And joining the Herald Sun Footy Podcast is Sam Landsberger. G'day, Sam.
G'day, Andy. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no. Well, thank you for giving up some of your time. I know you're a busy man. Let's talk the ladder. And let's talk the season. Because when you said to me just before, off air, we're going to give away some secrets here. We do talk off air. That it could be the most lopsided season in a long while. I took stock of that and I thought, actually, you could be right.
Look, this goes against the grain. I think a lot of people are saying, well, you know, look at Hawthorn on Sunday. They nearly rolled the reigning premiers. What a great season we're in for. I'm in the other camp. I think we're set for a June, July, August of nothing but dead rubbers. I mean, I think we've got four teams 0-4 for the first time in history. Adelaide, Hawthorn, North Melbourne, West Coast being that case. So you can put a line through those clubs. Yep. They're not playing finals. Richmond's 1-4. They played five games. Put a line through them. They've got an injury list as long as the Flemington Strait. Mm-hmm. They're not playing finals. Then you've got Essendon, 2-2, but with a percentage of 80. Their wins, one of those wins was against Hawthorn. They, you know, they weren't terrific that day. They had a gutsy win against St Kilda. They're 2-2, but let's be realistic. They're not playing finals either. So the way I look at it, you know, we're in the first week of April, second week of April. There are six teams out of contention. I reckon we're down to 12 clubs already. Now, last year, anyone you spoke to at the AFL said, what a great season. At round 20, there were 14 teams who could play finals. I think at that stage, the Gold Coast Suns were 9 wins. They were a game and percentage outside the 8 in 14th spot on the ladder. I don't think we're heading that way this year, which is disappointing from a footy fan's point of view.
Oh, well, if you've only got 12 teams, then, you know, three games every round are inconsequential, aren't they?
Correct. Yeah. So, I think it's shaping to be a bit of an anticlimactic finish to the year. I mean, to be already down to 12 potentially in the first week of April, I can't remember that ever happening before. Albeit we are adding a little bit of sort of license to that, and the fact that we are saying that the teams that are zipping four are dead when mathematically they're clearly not. We're throwing Richmond in there at 1-4, and we're throwing the Bombers in at 2-2. They might take a little bit of umbrage to that, but I think if you've been realistic and watched the way they're playing and the injury list they've got, I think it's going to be an absolute mountain to climb to get into the eight from where they are right now.
And add to that, you've got three teams that are 4-0 and two teams that are 4-1.
Exactly.
So you've really got huge disparity in wins and losses there.
And then to compound that, you've got North Melbourne and West Coast, who again look largely uncompetitive. They've probably both of them had two of the toughest starts to the season in some time. So I think right now both of their percentages are below 60. You'd expect that they would play more competitive footy as they get to play more teams around them. But they're two teams who are only going to win one, maybe two, three games probably between them for the year. I think there's a legitimate chance that West Coast could potentially not win a game this year. I think North Melbourne, you know, their only win might come against West Coast the way they're playing. So you're going to have a lot of blowouts and you're potentially going to have a lot of sides mathematically out of this September equation pretty early in the season.
And then I guess towards the end of the season, you know, you start to look at, well, who are the teams that are playing those blowout teams twice? And are we talking the eighth and ninth team, you know, being on percentage and things like that? So then we get back to that, is the AFL draw unfair?
Oh, yeah, I think we all know it's unfair. It's just how unfair is it and who benefits each year? There's that many inequities within the AFL fixture each season. It seems like it's something just that we have to cop. I mean, I spoke to clubs last week who are angry about the SA clubs getting an extra home game in Gatherround. I think that should be a showdown, but there are inequities every way you turn and look at the fixture. And someone is going to be the beneficiary of playing a couple of those bottom clubs twice, and that's going to determine a final spot. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and it has in the past, so it's not going to be a new thing. Sam, we talk about the bottom. Let's talk about the top. And Carlton, 4 wins for the season so far. Are they the new Collingwood?
Well, they are in the sense that they've won their last 9 games decided by 10 points or less. So they're 9-0. And for me, the remarkable thing about that is if you go back to round one last year, remember they had that draw against Richmond where they were totally in control of the game, somehow butchered it. Blake Akers took that mark at the very end or something. And that followed on their disastrous end to 2022 where they lost their final 4 games. They blew leads against Collingwood. They blew leads against Melbourne. They couldn't win a close game.
Yeah.
And they've absolutely turned that around. Their game management late in games is unbelievable. They got out of jail against the Dockers and they're now 9-0. They're doing what Collingwood did for 2 years. It is quite remarkable. And in a season where in a competition where it is tight at the top, those are the small margins which decide top four versus top eight. And as we saw last year with Collingwood winning 3 finals by slim margins, potentially a premiership. So it is a great skill to have to be able to close out close games and know how to do it. And for them to be able to turn it around from where they were 12, 18 months ago is extraordinary.
And we'll talk to Josh Barnes a little later about the fact that they're not playing that well either. You know, they're winning these close games compared to this time last year. You know, their clearance game is gone and things like that. So, but is there hope for the Dogs? Because they seem to be the ones that, like Carlton in 2022, couldn't win the close ones. The Dogs are sort of the anti-Carlton, the anti-Collingwood of last year. They just can't get there.
Yeah, so my take on this is Carlton is the new Collingwood and the Bulldogs are the old Carlton. So since the start of last year, the Dogs are 1-6 in close games. Clearly, they dropped another close game against Geelong on the weekend. And in 6 of those losses, they've led at 3-quarter time. Ooh. So there was some footage on one of the TV shows the other night about how Tim English took that infamous kick out against Hawthorn when they lost in Tasmania at the end of last season. It didn't really look like they knew what to do in the final moments against Geelong on Saturday night. That's an issue. I mean, I don't think luck is a factor in close games when you're getting a pattern of results. It comes down to game management, scenario training. And I wonder whether this week at the Bulldogs, they are really going to work on, right, what do we do in these situations when we're holding on to a lead or whether we're chasing a game? What can we do differently to manufacture a different result? Because to go 1-6 over their last close, in their recent close game since the start of last season, no doubt it cost them a final spot last year. And with a close loss early in this season, if that trend continues, I don't think they can expect to play finals. They need to bank some of these close, they need to bank 4 points in some of these close games.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, they add up because it will come down to... Well,
that's what happened to Carlton two years ago. Yeah,
absolutely. Talking about Carlton again, Sam Walsh.
Yeah, great to see him back this week. He's a certain to play against Adelaide. I got told from someone that watched their training 1 week before Good Friday, so 7 days before that game, that he trained really well. So he's been in pretty good form on the track for some time now. So I've got no doubt he's ready to go. What interests me is how that has an impact on Adam Chera. He's gone under the radar a little bit in the wrong sense. I think he's really struggling this year. I think his disposals have gone down by about 15%, contested ball down 18%, clearances down 27%, score involvement's down 20%. So all of his key numbers have reduced from 2023. Now Sam Walsh goes into the midfield. Does that make it easier for Adam? Does that reduce his midfield minutes? Does that take away from him? I just think there's a watch on Adam Chera and the fact that he is one player that isn't firing so far. And I'll just be fascinated to see what the effect of Sam Walsh coming in has on his form in the coming weeks. So just want to put that on the radar.
Watch on Adam Chera. But yes, let's hope that we get a few more close games and maybe some of those 0-4 teams can surprise us this week, Sam.
Fingers crossed because the season needs it.
Yeah, it sure does. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Andy.
I'm Andrew Rule, the host of the podcast A Life in Crimes. Here are some of the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. The brutal truth is that when you start looking at it, they always kill or injure a lot more than each other.
The professional hitman used to be a professional hitman.
evil strikes in all forms, but particularly as stupidity. Life and Crimes is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, another week, so another chance to talk to Josh Barnes. G'day, Barnsy.
Oh, it feels good to be back in this chair, Andy. It's been a long 7 days.
It sure has. Josh, I'm putting you in the hot seat. You don't think the Blues are any good?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that just yet, Andy. I think the way they're playing isn't that good is the finer point I would put on it. So sorry, Blues fans. I think Carlton's start to the year has not been setting the world on fire like many of us thought that they would be one of the dominant sides heading into this season. I think the way they're playing is dramatic. It's a dramatic shift from where they were last year. So last year they were really, really good around the stoppages. And when you think of Carlton, you think of sort of Cripps and Kennedy and those big bodies in the midfield. They've fallen away dramatically in there. Michael Voss addressed it earlier this week. Their points from stoppages was third last year. They're 12th at the moment this year. They were first in points against from stoppages last year. So the best defensive side out of clearances. Now they're 14th this year. So the flip side of that is their turnover game is pretty good. And that's important if you're going to be a premier. But yeah, their clearance game has fallen away drastically. And we saw in the weekend they really struggled against Fremantle for most of that game. I think most of us were falling asleep until the 20-minute mark of the last quarter when things started happening. But I think they're battling at the moment. But the good thing for Blues fans is that doesn't really matter if they're battling at the moment because they're not losing.
And they've beaten teams. It's not like they've, you know, just played against the teams that we think are going to be bottom dwellers. You know, they've beaten Fremantle, they've beaten Brisbane round one. So I would have thought, as a footy fan or a fan of that team, you'd be pretty happy about that. You know, you're not playing well, so there are plenty of things to fix, but yet you've played four games, you've won four games.
Yeah, well, what more can you ask for? I mean, you beat Richmond by 5 points in opening round, which I don't think anyone was super convinced by. Mm-hmm. You beat Brisbane by 1 point in opening round when you were down by 7-8 goals. Yep. You beat Fremantle by 10 points on the weekend, possibly thanks to a couple of handy whistles at the right time. So they're not convincing wins, but as a footy fan, you're getting wins, you're getting enjoyable wins that you like to watch the last 2 minute replay of, and then you're sitting in the top four in the ladder and undefeated at this stage. You've got Adelaide on the weekend, who you probably should beat. You want to see a convincing win at some point, but really at this stage of the season, it's all about banking those points.
And yeah, you give any footy fan the truth serum. I don't think you get anyone saying, I'd prefer to see my team play in a good game and still get beat than play in a rubbish game and come away with the 4 points.
Yeah, definitely. Carlton, they just have like those weapons up forward. Harry Mackay and Charlie Kenner have both been in good form to start the season, which is rare for them. Mackay had some slip-ups on the weekend. He sort of returned to form a little bit on that, but both of those players playing well. The midfield, if it can tick up from what we saw last year, if it can return to that form, gee, they're going to be pretty hard to beat if they're pretty hard to beat already.
And they're showing sort of shades of Collingwood of the last 2 years where, you know, they just keep bobbing up, don't they? They just, you know, Collingwood, particularly in 22, were, you know, they were the team that everyone thought, oh, I'll have to lose. Surely they have to lose this week. Surely they can't keep doing this. And they kept doing it. So, you know, Carlton, are that team. They had that record earlier in the season where they'd won more games than any other team by under, 6 points and under. So, yeah, they're finding a way. You mentioned the results. You mentioned the couple of lucky umpiring decisions that Carlton might have got on the weekend against Frio. You've written in today's Herald Sun about what umpires are saying about it.
Yeah, so umpires are looking to, I guess, overseas games, and they are interested in expanding, I guess, feedback publicly that we see. So at the moment, the way the system really works is something will happen on the weekend. Generally, the AFL will try and put Andrew Dillon up or somebody up if they can, if they have a reason to. Obviously, Gather Round was great for that because he was going on all the TV shows, so they could ask all the questions and they could say those questions have been answered. And then otherwise, we wait for Laura Kane to put out a video the day after the round, and we're all sort of sitting on our hands talking about it for 3 days that, oh, this decision was right, this was wrong. That's what happened with Jack Ginnivan. We talked about it for 48 hours until Laura Kane cleared up and said they were wrong. So umpires would like more, I guess, immediate feedback if possible, quicker turnarounds and those kind of things. We often looked at overseas sports, and it can be a bit of a folly sometimes because they have greater resources. But the gold standard really is in the NBA, where they have what they call a two-minute report. So any game that is within 3 points in the last 2 minutes of that game, there will be a report about it. So even if there weren't any contentious decisions, and they run through every decision made in the final 2 minutes of that match. and say whether they're right or wrong, whether they need more explanation, etc. And that is available 24 hours after every match that's close. And there's a lot of close matches in the NBA, Andy, I'll tell you that much. So there's a lot going on there, and they turn them around really quickly. And umpires think that umpires in the current standard, a couple of retired umpires I spoke to yesterday, they believe that the current umpires can handle that extra scrutiny. They don't think it'll fall back on individuals too much. I mean, nobody at the moment is talking about individual umpires, I don't think, from that Fremantle game. So nobody's blaming individuals. So I think they can handle the scrutiny, and they'd like it to be a little bit quicker and maybe a little bit more detailed, because at the moment it's sort of a bit vague sometimes that some of these decisions they say we got a little bit wrong, or next time we'd like to get right. But explanation and details helps educate us footy fans about what actually went wrong and what needs to be fixed.
Well, back in the day, you know, back even before my era, that you see clips on YouTube of World of Sport where they'd bring an umpire on and watch your decision, and they'd replay and say, how did you make this decision? I reckon even 10 years ago when Wayne Campbell was the umpire's boss, he'd go on AFL.com and sit down and talk through a couple of decisions. I think footy fans would understand better. I mean, because the umpires make hundreds of decisions in every game and they get the vast majority of them right. But anyone, they're human beings. It's not like it's AI. You know, they're going to get in the moment things wrong, aren't they? So, yeah, I noticed you spoke to Matthew Head and Shane McInerney for that story. Couldn't get onto Darren Goldspink?
No, I didn't have Darren Goldspink's number in my phone, unfortunately. yeah, it was sort of going back through some of the old classic umpiring names from the days. But, yeah, obviously they were obviously a lot of experience between those two, and particularly McInerney. He was a little bit hesitant. He umpired 500 games, so he knows the business more than anybody. He was a little bit hesitant that he was unsure they would have turnaround times quick enough. He said back in – he finished in 2019, he reckons by the end of his tenure – it would take sometimes until Thursday before they got a detailed report. And he reckons that was largely because it would have to be passed through AFL House, not just the umpires.
Yeah,
so it
would
have to be ticked off before it came back to the umpires that things were correct. And that's just internal memos, let alone the outside. Speaking about sort of people in the media, I mean, it was only 10, 15 years ago, I think, that in Jeff Geeshan's era of the umpiring, he would put himself up every week.
Absolutely.
And us media stopped turning up, so they stopped that practice, I believe. Yes. So we can be to blame a little bit, but I think in this day and age where people want things instantly, they want feedback immediately, people are watching the replays of these free kicks on Instagram and TikTok endlessly on the night of the game. You probably need to get your feedback in pretty quickly to sort of squash this talk that picks up over the weekend.
Oh, all the speculation. I mean, you see how popular the Twitter account did the umpire stuff it up or something? Yeah. It is every week, you know, so a contentious decision. That guy, who knows if it is an actual ex-umpire, you've got to take it at face value. But there's always a lot of conversation around particularly decisions that cost games or, you know, perceived to cost games late in those last 2 minutes. So I guess it's a watch this space. The AFL have shown themselves to be receptive to new ideas and taking ideas from overseas. So, you know, who's to say that they won't do this?
Yeah, and credit to them. They are committed to that video with Laura Kane will be a weekly thing. So that'll be Monday generally, unless there's a Monday game or what have you. So they're committed to trying to answer those burning questions from every weekend. And I think they're doing a reasonable job. It's just sort of the speed. I think particularly when we saw last year that Jeremy Cameron out of bounds fiasco against Collingwood, that was a Friday night game. It took 4 days of talk on the radio, and you often get sort of drip fed things from the AFL unless it just happens to be a reason for Andrew Dillon to be on things. You get sort of your quick answers drip fed through the media, but a public answering, I think, would help things just be a little bit easier and a little bit better for footy fans. And what the umpires most want, what they're frustrated about, I think, is the lack of explanation and education that fans still don't know why decisions are wrong. One experienced umpire I spoke to who umpired in big finals, he said that he sits on the couch and sometimes he's not sure whether decisions are right or not, and he lived and breathed the game for a long time. So more education and explanation, I think, can only help the umpires and help us.
Absolutely. Josh Barnes, for your weekly spot, thanks very much for joining me, mate.
Thanks, Andy. Speak next week.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Andy Belairs, and my thanks to Sam Landsberger and Josh Barnes for joining me today. Keep out for the live Supercoach blog of every match this round. We've got Mick McGuan's weekly analysis coming up Thursday online, the early tackle on Saturday, and Mark Robinson's can't miss Monday tackle online Sunday evening. Have a great week of footy. We'll catch you next week.